Welcome to the Human Performance Podcast. Here we talk about everything to do with human performance and how leaders and organizations can get the best out of themselves and their people. I'm your host, Alex Young. My guest on the podcast this week is Simone Kanego. Simone is the best-selling author of The Extraordinary Unordinary You. She's also a speaker, entrepreneur, and mother to six multicultural children. Sharing her journey of adopting three of her six children in foreign countries, her climb of Mount Kilimanjaro to raise cancer awareness, and all of the funny, scary, and inspiring stories that came along the way. We discuss being a mum of six and the importance of self-care, climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, and mindset, and the importance of believing in ourselves. Hi, Simone. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me here today.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure. And we were just chatting before we started recording. You're based in Florida. I've one of the few places in the United States I've not been, but I'm hoping to get back there once the planes and everything open up. Before we dive into travel plans and things like that, it'd be great if you could introduce yourself to everyone listening or watching.
Absolutely. So my name is Simone Kanego. I actually have a master's in accounting and I'm a CPA, but I didn't use that for very long. I'm a big believer in that it's okay to change your mind. And I've changed my mind many times. I've done many different things. But right now where I'm at and where I found my passion is in storytelling. I wrote a book mostly about my family. I have six children. We adopted our youngest three, and I've been married to my husband for 28 years. I've done a lot of cool things in my life, but you know, it really took me a long time to realize what I was capable of, look at myself and realize my value. And so a lot of my story is about kind of that evolution.
And you're someone, you know, looking through your backstory where you've got multiple things that you've done, which are all, you know, individually absolutely amazing and all make up this sort of larger story. For you, what was kind of, you know, your first kind of big journey or thing that you kind of overcame, do you think?
Whew. Well, it took me a long time to overcome self-doubt. I mean, that would probably be the biggest part of my journey in terms of my evolution. But I want to say the best part of my journey is my children, honestly. I mean, it's especially having six, people look at us and they're like, six, really? but it's been really an amazing experience also to adopt three children and to have children from different countries and, you know, from all over the world. It's really kind of opened our eyes to the world itself.
I mean, that in itself is absolutely amazing. And what was sort of your impetus to adopt and to do that with the children that you ended up adopting?
Yeah. So we already had three kids. So that's why people kind of, our friends are like, seriously? But there really are so many amazing kids in the world just waiting for a family to love them. And we felt like we could be that family. We still are that family. We're done. Six is good. The minivan is full, but our entire family was on board with it. We made it a family process. We all voted each time because raising a child takes a village. Giving birth to a child takes a village. Raising a child, you know, through adoption takes a village. So it was important for us that the kids that were already at home had a say in what was going to happen. And each time they all were 100% on board. And if you ask them today, they would say, do it again. And I'd say, I'm done.
And did you have any sort of particular challenges that you faced sort of when you were sort of going through the adoption process or anything like that in terms of, you know, making that decision or going through the process?
So the process itself is just long. It's long and there's a lot of paperwork. It's completely changed since when we adopted our children. Our first adoption was Noah. He's from South Korea and he was a baby. He was 4 months old. And we chose South Korea actually because my husband is a physician. And so he's real big into medical records. Of course, it doesn't matter. I mean, who knows what records we really got. But the most important thing for us is that the children went into foster care. And so it meant that they had, you know, somebody hugging them and loving them until the day we were able to be there. And that was journey number one. And after that, we had talked about going back to South Korea, but my husband, the cutoff was a certain age, and he was that age when we adopted Noah. And so we couldn't go back to South Korea. And so we looked at another country that would fit our family, and we chose Ethiopia. And Ari came home at 4.5 years old, and that was an amazing experience because, you know, he had memories. He had 4.5 years of experience before we met him. But even when we were at the orphanage, we brought our oldest girls with us at the time, and they fell in love with the children at the orphanage. And so we knew when we were there that we would come back again. And so we did. A year later, we adopted Millie, and she definitely completed our family. She lights up any room she walks into. She was 2.5 years old, and you know, they're crazy, chaos, amazing siblings.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. And I mean, for anyone who, you know, is kind of considering adoption or anything like that, do you have any sort of particular advice or any kind of you know, things that you encountered that people might not have considered before?
Yeah, I think a lot of times people will feel frustrated because it is such a long process. But I can tell you that it's 100% worth it. It has changed our lives in the most positive of ways. And if you have the opportunity, if this is just, don't give up, just keep going. Because I know, especially now during COVID, things have really slowed down, and I know how hard it is. You're checking emails all the time. When we adopted, I was checking the mailbox all the time. But you know, it will happen, and you just have to have the patience to know that your child is waiting for you.
No, amazing. And yeah, amongst raising 6 children and adopting, one of the coolest things in my opinion, in your you know, backstory is climbing a very famous mountain. Can you sort of dive into that a little bit?
Yeah. So it's funny, people will ask me, so how did that come about? I'm like, well, it kind of fell in my lap. And the reason I say that is because I had never climbed anything before. Our friend had climbed it the year before with an organization in the US that does fundraising for cancer patients. And so he had a great experience, and he said to my husband, are you interested in doing it? And of course, the way I tell the story is my husband said, 1, 2, 3, no, thank you, call Simone. And he tells it differently. But he did call me, and I said, absolutely. And then I started looking at, okay, what did I just sign myself up for? And it was a lot of work, right? I mean, I am not a super athlete, but I really wanted to accomplish this goal. I knew that I had to put in the work behind it. I mean, I love setting goals, but it's putting the work behind the goal to really get there. And I did. I worked out every day for hours on end. I wore this elevation training mask to kind of restrict the airflow into my lungs to build lung capacity. My kids laughed at me all the time when I wore it. And these days, if I would wear it, people would be like, oh, she's wearing a mask. No big deal. But then, you know, I showed up, and this was in Tanzania, Africa, Mount Kilimanjaro. And I went with complete strangers. There were 16 of us, and we were, obviously the goal was to summit Kilimanjaro, but also to raise funds and awareness for this foundation. And it was really one of the most life-changing experiences of my life. Life-changing of my life, yes. So, you know, for me, it was not just the physical part of it that was a challenge, but the mental part, because I did struggle for so long to believe in myself, to say, okay, you got this. And when I reached the summit, that was one of those things where I said, okay, I'm done limiting myself. Like, if I really want to do something, and I have to want to do it, it's not just because someone else wants it for me, and I put in the work behind it, I can do it.
I mean, it's amazing, as you say, not just the kind of physical training that's kind of required to go up altitude, but also that sort of mental just fortitude that you need as well when you do that. In terms of, you know, you saying you'd never done anything like that before, what was your kind of mindset going into that experience, do you think?
my mindset is that I'm gonna summit this mountain. I mean, that's kind of from the beginning. I said that because I had lots of people say to me, do you think you're going to make it all the way to the top? And my response would be like, no, I'm going to make it halfway. That's why I decided to do this. So that kind of made it even more of a challenge for me, like to really say, okay, it's not to beat the naysayers, but really, it was really for myself to really kind of say that, wait, you can do these things. If you want to do them, you can do these things. And, so my mindset from the beginning, because I put the training in, if I didn't put the training in, that would have been a different story. Then, you know, it was just, you got this. And when times were tough, I had to say it out loud to myself. You got this. Just one foot in front of the other. Keep going. And that applies to my life in general. I think it applies to all of our lives. You know, sometimes when things get really tough, it's one foot in front of the other. And you got to believe in yourself to say, I can get through this. I've got this.
And interestingly, I did a medical elective placement at actually Mount Meru Hospital in Tanzania, and it's an absolutely amazing place. And, you know, Mount Kilimanjaro is one of the kind of most, you know, fearsome kind of mountains to climb. What were some of the, you know, your memories of that? Were there any periods where it got really, really tough for you?
It was really the summit attempt that was the toughest. Honestly, the whole thing was tough. It's a really long climb because you start outside the national park, and so I want to say 50 miles, but honestly, as I get older, I forget the days, so it was a lot of miles. And you know, you go through different climate zones, so you're not just, you start in like the tropical rainforest and then you end up in, you know, on a glacier. So you have to prepare in terms of clothing. We were very fortunate in terms of the weather. I know my friend who had done it the year before, they had rain and snow every single day, which makes it so much more challenging. We didn't really have that. We had some snow. I mean, it was very windy, but in general, it was very pleasant way to climb that mountain. And, you know, I'm from Florida. We're used to very warm temperatures and it was freezing. So to get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, like that was a big challenge for me. Forget hiking up the mountain, but going to the bathroom was tough.
And how did you, you know, when you actually got to the summit, can you remember that moment? Was that like sort of, you know, a life-changing experience just in itself getting to the summit?
Yeah. So I had there was a couple of really cool parts about it. So there's actually three different peaks that have signs as you're going up. And so when we got to the first one was right about when the sun was starting to rise, and I took out my phone to take a picture of one of my friends, and I had three bars and I was able to call home, and people are like, you're kidding. I'm like, no, I'm not kidding. I'm not sure how I had cell service, because a lot of the time I did not. But I did, and I was able to call home, and my husband answered, and the kids were cheering, and then the dogs were barking, and then the kids were yelling at dogs to stop barking, and the kids were yelling at each other to stop yelling. But it was really a really amazing. That just added another layer to it, to hear them, their support in the background, because, you know, you're silent for a long time. Like you don't have that cheering team like you do at a marathon or something where, you know, people are standing there cheering you on. But yeah, when we got to the summit, it was really an emotional experience. I mean, I don't think any of us, I think all of us were crying and hugging and crying, and the tears were freezing to our face. And but really thinking back about, you know, all of the challenges that I've had, and they really got me to that moment in time. I mean, all of those bumps in the road really kind of helped me achieve this goal, because it, you know, I don't know if I would have done it otherwise, right? Like this was kind of like a thing for me to say to myself, like, that you can do this. And it was even more special because some of the people that I traveled with, they are cancer survivors. And so to see them experience that moment where, you know, they weren't sure that they would be able, probably 5 years before, they didn't even know that they would be there to be able to do that. And so it just added so much to it.
That's absolutely fantastic. And I mean, congratulations on reaching the summit. I mean, what an amazing achievement. Now, but part of, you know, what you do now is all about sort of inspiring others and talking about things like self-care and mindset. Can you sort of explain a little bit about how your journey sort of reached there and what you do?
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, when you look back at your journey and you think, you know, how did I get here? But I, you know, all of the things that I've done got me to here. And I think it's so important that we share our stories with other people. Because it, for me, and again, with writing my book, it was really about if I can inspire one person by sharing very personal stories, then it's worth it, whether it's to do with adoption or my 18-year-old daughter, she was diagnosed with Crohn's 2 years ago, and kind of that whole experience. Our 15-year-old son, he is on the autism spectrum. So, you know, some of those stories are kind of, you know, woven throughout the book. But I do think it's so important that we share our struggles. It's not just our shiny moments. You know, I think that we are so caught up in, you know, what we see on social media. And social media does serve a perfect purpose, but, you know, we see, you know, everybody's shiny moments, and we forget that we have our own because we look at what everybody else is doing. So especially with six kids, it's really important for me to kind of model the behavior and model like, okay, these are the things that I struggled with. And I know you're going to have your own struggles. I mean, that's how it works, but understanding that you have value and that you matter and that those little things that you do every day make a difference in the world. And I didn't realize that for a long time. And so that's why it's so important for me to, you know, get up speaking and share my stories. And so that's kind of where I am right now. I'm working on a new keynote, really talking about women. And we know this, It's not that we don't know this, but it's kind of like saying it out loud. You know, as I was doing research for this speech, one of the statistics is that only 4% of women worldwide consider themselves beautiful. And to me, that is just mind blowing. I never thought about it like that before. I'm like, do I look in the mirror and say, I think I'm beautiful? I don't know. So it's, I mean, I can see how that statistic is so low. But as I look at my daughters, I don't want them to look in the mirror and say, I don't think I'm beautiful. I want them to look in the mirror and say, I am amazing. And being able to say things out loud and talk to people about their struggles and their shiny moments, I think that's how we get to that point.
Yes, yeah, really, really interesting. I mean, in your opinion, kind of having researched that, you know, this topic, why do you think that, you know, that percentage is so skewed? Why do you think people have that, you know, lack of value either in their, you know, their personal appearance or some other traits that they might possess?
Yeah. So and again, this is just my opinion, but again, what we see in front of us, what is valued in society, are people who are very thin. Things are changing. I mean, things are definitely changing. It's not, so this is an overgeneralization. But when we look at most celebrities, and I love celebrities, so it's nothing against celebrities, but you know, that these, you know, there are specific requirements, you know, and I've heard interviews with celebrities before where they talk about that they barely eat because they have to maintain this weight or else they won't get the next role. I mean, that's not realistic in our society anymore. I think that we need to value so many more things, but it puts a lot of pressure on girls today when they, and it did when I was younger, and we didn't have social media. I mean, we didn't have the internet, so, or barely. You know, for our girls to see stuff on social media all the time, and especially now where you have influencers and they have millions of followers, and what are they following? You know, like it's fascinating. And so I was actually reading the introduction to my keynote to my 18-year-old daughter the other day. And I was telling her a story about, it was a story from when I was 16 and my boyfriend at the time telling me that I looked fat and that I should probably have a salad at dinner. You know, it stuck with me my entire life. Like that was really the beginning of my self-doubt. And as I was reading her this whole thing, she said, is that story about me? And I said, no, that's my story. That story is about me. And she's like, it could be my story as well. And that's like, that's a killer. That's heartbreaking, right? Like we need to do better.
And what do you think? I mean, you mentioned obviously kind of having conversations around these topics. I mean, is there anything that you think specifically can be kind of done in terms of either raising awareness or directly tackling some of these problems?
So one of the things I realized for myself, and I didn't even realize that I was doing this, but I have struggled with weight my whole life. Like I, you know, and I'm happy now. Like I'm like, okay, this is who I am and I own it. And, but for a long time, it wasn't that I would never say anything to my children like, oh, you know, you shouldn't eat that, or you shouldn't do that. Or, but I would do that about myself in front of them. So I'd say, oh my gosh, I can't believe you don't fit in your pants again. Or, I can't believe you just ate that, you know? And like some of the times I was just muttering under my breath. And one day my daughter said to me, you're giving me a complex. She's like, you need to stop being so hard on yourself. And I said, what are you talking about? She's like, I hear everything you say and you are not nice to yourself. And when you're not nice to yourself, what do you think I do? I look in the mirror and think, if you can't accept your body, why should I accept mine? And wow, like that was a moment where I was like, I didn't realize the damage I was doing by talking bad about myself to myself. And I think a lot of us do that. And I was actually speaking with someone the other day about it. And she's like, I never paid attention to it before either, but she's like, I do it all the time. And yeah, it's not saying something directly to someone, but the effect is still the same. And I think also we don't talk about things. So like the negative things that we say to ourselves and about ourselves in front of other people, I think it's very damaging, not just to ourselves, but to other people. And then also we don't like talking about our struggles. I think that's just a general thing. I think that we feel that if we talk about something that we struggle with, that it shows weakness or that it's a failure. But to me, I think that's how we help other people, by sharing the things that we struggle with.
100%. And it's very interesting because I know your husband is in healthcare as well. And, you know, a lot of my colleagues and peers have kind of suffered from things like burnout. And I think, you know, particularly male sort of suicide rate amongst, you know, healthcare professionals is statistically higher than the, you know, the sort of international average, which itself is incredibly high as well. You know, that's almost like a version of what you're talking about for women, where it's not necessarily things like looks and appearance, but it's you know, I'm not good enough. I you know, haven't got my you know, top ranked job in the hospital I want, or whatever it is. How do you think as a society we can really sort of open that conversation up around sort of, you know, self-worth on a, you know, a wider scale?
Yeah, I think that it's starting the conversation. Again, I think that we as a society, as a world, where we are afraid to talk about things that are sensitive, right? It's hard to have those conversations. It's hard to sit down. You know, it took me a long time to get to that point where I felt comfortable saying, hey, you know, this is what I struggle with. And but what was really interesting is as I started having those conversations with friends who had no idea that they say from the outside, oh, Simone, you climb Kilimanjaro, you have six children, like everything is perfect in your life. And, you know, unless you say it out loud, people don't know. And you know what? People want to help. People want to be there to support you. But until we feel comfortable being able to talk about what we struggle with, and things are getting better. I mean, we definitely see more awareness around mental health and support for that. But still, like I think when we live in a society where you feel that you're going to be judged about anything you say or do, it's really difficult. But again, for my kids, I say, you got to talk about it, like with your friends. And luckily I've been really, really, it's been really successful when my kids are having an issue and I say to them, just pick up the phone and call your friend. I was like, you can text as much as you want. They're not getting the same message. They don't get what you need. They don't understand it. Just pick up the phone. And then they pick up the phone and they have that conversation, whatever they're struggling with, whether it's a, you know, a moment in time or something about themselves or something about their friend. And then I get the call back, and these are my kids that are away at college. I'll get a call back that says, you were right. I was like, oh, I was right. That was a miracle. But they're like, yeah, that's what I needed to do. I needed to use my words out loud and really be able to explain what I was struggling with.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think in obviously, you know, we do a lot of corporate training and things like that. And I think having those kind of open, honest coaching conversations throughout any sort of workforce as well is really, really important, whether it's healthcare, whether it's, you know, it's other sectors. Having those kind of open, you know, safe environments to discuss problems without, you know, fear of any kind of repercussions is super, super, you know, important for everyone. Well, one thing I wanted to touch on was obviously, you know, you've written this fantastic book, which in itself is an amazing achievement. What sort of spurred you to actually write down a lot of these stories and how did you kind of go about that?
So I realized when I was doing some volunteer work that I really love storytelling, and I realized the power of storytelling. You know, by background, obviously I'm a CPA, I'm a numbers person. But the more research I've done, the more conversations I have, data's data, but stories will last forever. So when you share a story about something, people are going to remember that. They may not remember the numbers that you gave them. They're going to remember the stories that you told them. And so as I got onto different stages and started sharing my stories, I would have people say to me, "Wow, you're so inspiring." And this was a struggle for me because I did not accept compliments at the time. Like, I really struggled to just say, my friends would say, "Just say thank you. Simple as that. Say thank you. That's all you need to do." But the more I you know, more stages I stood on and told my stories, the more people would say, "Oh, have you written a book?" And I'd say, "No, I'm not a writer." Limiting myself again, "I'm not a writer." "Well, you should write a book. You have amazing stories." I heard that quite a few times and I thought, why not write a book? And so I said to my husband, I think I'm going to write a book. And he's like, "I can't wait to read it. And just want to remind you that you're not a writer." And he's like, "But I completely support you." And I was like, "No, trust me. I understand that I'm not a writer. I got this, you know?" And I really just started sitting down and writing down my stories and figuring out how I wanted to connect them. And the way I decided that I really wanted to connect the stories together was really talking about that we don't need to change who we are. We need to change the way we see ourselves because we all bring value to the world. We all have these extraordinary pieces within us. We just need to realize it. And so that was kind of the ultimate goal of how I put it together. And honestly, some of my best writing moments were in the chaos of the family room because that would bring back like the vivid moments of a story of, "Oh, I forgot about that. Let me write that one down. That was a good one." And obviously with 6 kids and a husband of 28 years, I have lots of stories, lots of good material.
No, I bet. And you know, from when you have had people sort of giving you feedback on the book or when you've been doing your speaking, are there any particular stories that, you know, have really sort of struck home with any audiences or listeners in particular?
Yeah, a lot of them. I mean, so I talk about the adoption stories of our kids and each one is completely different and kind of those definitely bring moments of tears to people's eyes. You know, we have ridiculous stories too, where we had rats that destroyed our minivan. And so people are like, "Are you kidding me?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm not kidding you. Okay. I have 6 kids. I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro and rats ate my minivan to the point where they had to total the car." Yes, that's me. I try to put it all out there. I mean, there's definitely, I didn't actually have my husband read the book until it was completely done, literally until it was in book format, because I wanted it to be my perspective. And I knew that if any of my family, other than my one daughter, Olivia, she helped me with some word choices because she's really good with that. I'd be like, "What's this word?" She's like, "Oh, this is better." I knew that it wouldn't be my stories anymore because I would have to be like taking, just like the Kilimanjaro story, 1, 2, 3, no, thank you. He would have been like, "No, that's not how it was." So I waited until I was done and he was like, "I loved it." He's like, "I know these stories and they still made me cry. I know these stories and they still make me laugh." And my friends would say that they could hear my voice inside their head. And I was like, "That's the best compliment you can give me." I wasn't trying to change the way I wrote, you know, I wanted it to be like a conversation on the couch. And I think that's how it turned out. So I was pretty happy with it.
That's fantastic. And, you know, just as we sort of start to wrap things up, I mean, obviously you've been on this kind of incredible, you know, journey of you know, understanding yourself and sort of overcoming these areas of kind of self-doubt and things like that that you sort of describe through these stories. What for you has been, you know, your personal kind of biggest takeaway from all these experiences, do you think?
If you want to do something, you should do it. Don't, you know, give yourself permission to try and fail and try again. And don't look at it as a failure as the end of the road. It's kind of like it's the beginning of the next road. And I think we sometimes forget that. And for me, I think it's been really important for me to kind of look at all of the things that I used to stress about or used to think that, oh, I can't do this because, and in our house, can't means won't. Means you won't even try. So we don't use the word can't. And, you know, really asking myself what I want for me, what I want for my family versus what I see the outside world wanting. And that for me has been probably the biggest takeaway.
No, that's amazing. And as you know, one of the things we like to ask all our guests who come on the podcast is about their own human performance hero. So I'd be really interested to know who yours might be.
So I'm actually going to say that my husband, because he, well, first of all, he's put up with me for 28 years. But in terms of, you know, he works so hard, but he gets up every morning at 4 o'clock. He gets on his bike. He rides his bike. He works out every day. It makes him feel like a better person. And when he comes home from work, you know, after, you know, all of the things that all the stress of healthcare and patients, because they're not just patients, they're humans, and it's very personal. And he'll come home and he jumps right back into whatever chaos we have, you know, in our family, just like, you know, it's just part of the routine. And so, you know, kind of the way he is able to manage everything and still get on that bike every morning. And actually, he'll still ask me, he's like, was that too noisy? Did it bother you? And I'm like, that's so sweet, but no, get on your bike. You need your bike. So, you know, he's an amazing man.
That's a great example. I fully support anyone who's giving healthcare professionals as their human performance hero, especially neurosurgeons.
Yes, for sure.
Fantastic. Well, Simone, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. If people want to find out more about you, where can they go to do so?
Yeah, you can check me out on my website, simonecanego.com. Probably even if you spell it wrong, you'll find me because I think I'm still the only Simone Canego in the world, which is a pretty cool thing, actually. So I always joke that someone's eventually going to name their kid after me just to spite me, right? Just to take away that unique title that I have of being the only one. But yeah, I would love to hear if people read the book, if people have questions for me, I would love to hear from them because, my life is really about human connection. It's about learning from other people and it's about sharing what I've learned. You know, again, if I can help one person, then I feel like I've really done my job.
Absolutely. I've been absolute pleasure speaking with you and wish you all the best with your continued adventures and hopefully enough to fill another book in the near future.
I'm trying. I'm working on it. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks, Simone.